welcome to episode 17 of the Final Boss Blues podcast. Today I'm joined by my usual hosts, Killam.
Hello, everyone.
And Raynard Frost.
Hello, all.
And Captain Jet.
Hello.
Who's still not a regular co-host.
Yeah, not a regular co-host yet.
Not yet, but by the way things are going, he might be around for a while. Today we're going to be talking about this classic phrase that is used a lot in writing, and it's show, don't tell, and we're going to be talking about applying that into your games. So before we get going to details, I'm going to briefly describe the way that the concept of show, don't tell is used in the context of writing fiction. It's something that happens a lot. For example, if a character is feeling sad, or if they're feeling angry, or whatever, instead of simply writing, you know, he was sad, he was mad, he felt this, you would rather show that by showing that kind of emotion and how it affects the character. Like, instead of saying...
He clenched his butt cheeks furiously.
Exactly. Like, instead of saying he was angry, you say he threw the vase across the room and it shattered against the wall. Something like that. You can use it to spice up your scenes in writing without laying out in a very bland and boring way the way the character is feeling. You actually show it, and then the reader feels it a little better. So we're going to be talking about how ways in which to apply this kind of storytelling to your games. And Raynard, do you want to kick us off?
Certainly. One excellent way to show off this sort of thing is through NPC dialogue. Because there's a difference between saying, there's a war with the big bad guys over there, and basically saying, you know, I wonder if my son's okay. He's gone over to this nation. He was conscripted into the army and stuff like that. Or if there's a big bad in a cave nearby, just go, you know, oh, people have been going in the cave and nobody's returned. Instead of just going, there's a monster in the cave. Shoot him. It's more of you want to try and make your world feel alive by coming up with realistic and believable ways about how people would talk about a nearby event. Like, nobody's going to sit there and go, a guy got stabbed. They're just going to sit there. Well, they probably would say a guy got stabbed, but they're not going to sit there and go, go stop the murderer in the warehouse. They're going to sit there and go, I heard there was some stabbings over in the warehouse. Somebody should check that out. Somebody hint, hint, wink, wink. So those are ways to do that.
Yeah, I agree completely. My big thing with NPCs is that they're actually their own main character in their own story. So would you as a person in your neighborhood stand outside your neighborhood and say, hello, welcome to Gameville every single time to every newcomer? No, you'd walk around, you'd sightsee, you'd do all this stuff. You wouldn't just stand in one spot and see the same line to every single person that walked by.
Yeah, instead of having to say, welcome to the city, you could basically say things like, you know, just go, man, this city's really great, or, oh, is this your first time being here? You can mix it up so it doesn't sound so much like a Walmart greeting person.
Yeah, or just say, get out, I don't like you, I don't know who you are. Seriously, that's a realistic response.
Why are you in my house? Why are you rummaging through my curtains?
Yeah, exactly. NPCs should be their own main character, so always make them care about the world. And here's another thing to take note of. Your player, when he explores the world, he's going to have to save it, most likely, because that's how most RPGs function, save the world. And if the NPCs are boring, the world's boring, he has no motivation to save the world, so why should he give a shit?
Exactly.
Because he's the chosen one.
Well, yeah, besides that.
Another way to show the state of the world beyond the NPC dialogue, falling into the show-don't-tell theme, is to graphically show the world. Obviously, that's a little redundant, but for example, you're in a city and there was say that you want to convey the backstory of the city a little bit. Like, maybe there was a revolution 15 years ago. That's kind of long, but not really long in the grand scale of history. So if the revolution was 15 years ago, it makes sense that there would still be repercussions visible throughout the city. For example, there might be a couple of ruined buildings, and there would be people living in them, like squatters, that kind of thing. Even though the revolution, you know, the violence has, for the most part, it's gone. It's not in people's active memories. There are people alive who lived back then. And you can show it in the actual city itself, because obviously, you know, not every building is going to have to be completely rebuilt in that time frame.
Yeah, or you could show buildings in construction that were in that thing. Like, you can basically show, ask yourself, how, you had an event 15 years ago, how is this city going to reflect that? Like, how would these citizens rebuild, or how would they cope, or what type of effect was it? Was this city totally razed and it's being built back from scratch, or was it kind of in the outskirts and people go, you know, like somebody could sit in there and say, you know, oh man, you know, we got off lucky when that war happened. We didn't have a lot of damage. And you show that by having, you know, the city doesn't look that affected, but you go to the next city over where something really serious happened and you could still have craters and you could have like graveyards and stuff.
Exactly. Your suggestion about construction leads into my other example. On the reverse end, what about there's a new king for the town and everybody loves him. He's doing great things for the economy. He's, you know, creating jobs, and you can have a lot of construction there to illustrate that there's, you know, people working and there's progress, and it shows that this new king is working to build up his city and his people, instead of just having some NPC who says, you know, oh, I like the new king, he gave me a job. You can actually show NPCs working, and you can show the construction sites, and you can show, you know, maybe even like people are laying down a railroad track, that kind of thing. And there are visual touches that you can add to not only bring depth to the world, but physically show history that might otherwise be, you know, shown through exposition. And people don't want to be told these things. They would like to see them and live them and experience them on their own.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be extravagant, too. Like, you don't have to have custom animations if you can't with the budget of your project. Like, let's say you have a trading town. Instead of having the guy say, this is a trading town, have, like, 18,000 shops lining up, people wanting for you to buy their wares. You can just have a bunch of shops in one line. Like, there's just so many things you can do. What I do normally is I just have one central theme for each town. Each town has a backstory. There's a reason it's there. And then I build every single NPC and house around that theme, and it breathes life into the town.
Yeah, you really don't have to go completely overboard with it. I mean, it's pretty obvious that a town is supposed to be a trading port if, hey, there's a port there and there's some boats there.
Yeah, but then that doesn't really seem alive. That should be the bare minimum. If it's a trading town, people are going to set up shops, so have a lot of shops there. Even if the player can't afford it or the player can't access it, at least showcase it through the gameplay.
Yeah, but just it needs to be more realistic in the idea that not every place is going to be so exciting. Like, okay, sometimes ships just go there because it's really convenient. It's on the edge of the continent or something, you know, but...
Yeah, but he's talking about in the extent of this is a major trading hub. So if you want to show it's a major trading hub, have a lot of shops. Not every town has to be like that, obviously. But if a city isn't a major trading hub and it's just a small boondock town, you would have just like a farm and a couple houses.
I agree and disagree on the point that every city or every area should be exciting. In the real world, in your world that you're creating, not every place is going to be exciting. But there should be something exciting for the player in every area that he visits.
I don't know about that. Personally, while not exciting, can we at least agree on every town should have a purpose? Like, even if it's just an inn, like, there's a
town. Yeah. Like, you could talk about towns that the player doesn't actually visit because they're not that noticeable. It's just like, oh, yeah, there have been some towns nearby. Oh, there's this town. The player doesn't need to go there unless there's a purpose to being there, unless there's some type of thing to interact with.
Yeah, something exciting should be in every area that the player goes to, gameplay-wise, story-wise. That makes the player feel like he's actually, you know, there's a purpose and he wants to keep playing. You're not going to have some random areas that the player goes to just for the sake of, you know, saying, hey, this town exists. If nothing's going on there, you're detracting something from your game that could be an exciting event that the player would otherwise be doing.
Yeah, I agree then. I see no problem with that.
All right, I don't want to move too far away from the topic of show, don't tell. Killam, do you want to talk a little bit more about conveying theme by showing it rather than just stating it in the game?
Well, yeah, like you said in the beginning of the podcast, I think Raynard had this example. You have a guy who's stabbed, and how about this? Instead of saying, oh no, I was stabbed, have him actually physically be stabbed. Make a custom sprite animation of having him be stabbed. Convey what's happening through graphics, through the player's eyes, in real time. That has a much bigger impact than you'd think. Like, a little custom animation goes a long way.
And if you're not that graphically inclined, you can try doing it with some audio sounds. Like, you can have one NPC, like old Final Fantasy games, they would have an NPC walk up to the other one and just go, have a little tsh sound.
And like then, a little flash, yeah.
Yeah, like a little flash, and then the other player would just have them laying down. So it's, you can just do one single pose. It doesn't have to be a very elaborate animation.
Yeah, what I'm talking about is, of course, if you have a budget and you're very good with the graphics, it's not really a necessity, but it should definitely be considered. Because trust me, you can have a character who's upset, and instead of saying, I'm sad, have a little sprite tweak that has the character facing down with his head down and slumped. His shoulders are slumped. It's a little edit, and it goes a long way. And even then, your dialogue will also just fit a lot more, and it brings life into the character.
Yeah, that's something I do in every game that I make. For all the major characters, particularly the heroes, and maybe a couple major antagonists too, I give them, not in addition to their regular walking animations, I give them an animation for laughing, for nodding their head, shaking their head, and with their eyes closed. They're very simple, very basic edits. Pretty much anybody can do them. All you need is, you know, Microsoft Paint. They're not particularly difficult to make, just these small modifications. But being able to sprinkle these little animations throughout the dialogue can add so much to the game, and drawing the player in and making the characters feel more alive and really showing the way that they're feeling and animating the dialogue a little bit more. Obviously, you don't want to overuse these things. It can be a little annoying if every other text box the character shakes his head. But if you sprinkle them here and there, it can add a lot to your world and to your characters.
And also to the dialogue. Like, even if you have boring dialogue, which, let's face it, chances are you probably do. That's not an insult per se, it's just hard to write dialogue. Those animations will actually make the dialogue a lot more vibrant, even if the dialogue isn't so good. Like, just having, I'm sad, and then you add a little shoulder shrug and then the head pointing down, that's going to go a long way, even if the dialogue isn't up to par.
And that these animations can flat-out replace dialogue. In some cases, you can just, instead of having a text box that says, ha, 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 you can just have a little animation of your character laughing. And it's a little less text coming at you in favor of a more visual representation. And I'm always looking for chances to replace text boxes with little graphical things whenever I can.
Yeah, I agree. Does anyone else have any comments on graphics? Can I move on to...
Well, I think you don't exactly have to do graphics all the time. You can, through text, convey more information than just saying something flat or obvious. Instead of saying, I'm sad, you could basically... Somebody could say, oh, I don't want to talk about it, or they could turn down an event. Just think of, if you're sad, how would you react to somebody saying something to you? You're not just going to sit there and go, I'm sad. They would just sit there and be like, is everything okay? And they'll be like, oh, I'm all right. Like just a sigh or something like that. There's way to use less words to say more than just going, I'm sad because somebody robbed me. You just go, it's fine, I just lost something.
Yeah, but the problem with
that's another entirely valid way of showing and not telling, to convey somebody's emotions by what they're saying and how they're acting, instead of having them simply state the way that they're feeling.
But at the same time, Rainer's example would also rely on body language, like, I'm all right, and then, like, he'd turn his head to the side, leave me alone. You know what I mean? Like, that's heavily reliant on body language, too.
Sure, the body language certainly spices it up. It's not necessary, but it can really push your game to the next level.
Oh, yeah, it's not necessary, of course, but we're talking about, like...
Yeah, it'll flesh it up, but if you're saying, I'm all right, I just lost something, and throw in a sigh, there are ways you can add text for people who aren't graphically inclined, because not everybody's going to be able to do custom poses. It would be ideal, yes, but not everybody has those resources or is willing to put in that type of time, and it would be a lot easier for them to just put in a little text thing. So it's good to have those alternatives. It's basically say more with less.
Yeah, at the very minimum, it's better than having somebody state their feelings. They're still showing their feelings, even though they're speaking and technically the player is reading it. It's still showing and not telling, because they're not outright saying what's going on. The player can understand from the context.
Well, yeah, I agree. And also, I completely forgot to mention this. Instead of just having the graphics speak for the character, have the music too. Like, if you have sad music playing in the background while a character's talking, it's going to be a sad tone, so it's going to amplify what the character's saying to be even more sad. And for me, music has always been the most important part of a video game.
Yes, not gameplay.
Not gameplay music.
You're kicked off the podcast.
All right. I'll see you guys next week when you don't have a third person.
But yeah, no, music definitely helps a lot when it comes to a game. It's not the most important, but it's one of those things that's equally important as the other parts. I mean, a game with a good soundtrack, I'll have a lot. A soundtrack makes me have more fun with a game. Like, if you took something like Devil May Cry and gave it a mediocre soundtrack, it wouldn't be nearly as fun. Like, the whole high rock, high tempo music makes their very combo heavy combat system fun. It also adds to the attitude of Dante. If Devil May Cry had a completely different soundtrack than what it does have, it wouldn't be nearly as good as the game it is.
Yeah, what music does is it amplifies the experience. It doesn't really add anything onto it, but it definitely multiplies how much enjoyment you can get out of it. Like,
yeah, another thing with the music is that even more important than having the right music, having the wrong music can kill everything. I've played RPG Maker games where there's a really sad scene going down, but they never change the music. So, like, they're in a town, and there's still this happy, chipper town music in the background. And it's like, what? Am I supposed to feel sad? Why am I sitting here grooving out to this, you know?
Why did you have to die?
Yeah, the wrong music in the wrong situation can absolutely kill something. Based off of that same idea, I think that silence is not something that should be underrated.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Absolutely.
Oh, especially when you're trying to do something horrifying. Like, silence is creepy as hell. Like, when there is no sound whatsoever, that just kind of puts you on edge more than just having an actual creepy song sometimes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because most people are used to the music in the background telling them how they're supposed to feel at the moment. So when you don't give them anything, they have to interpret it for themselves.
Yeah, and that's scary.
But it only works in contrast. If you normally have sound, and then you take away the sound, that's when the horror comes in, because that's when somebody go, wait a second, it's too quiet. It's normally not like this. Like, what's going to happen?
Yeah, you give your player a comfort zone. Like, he listens to music every stage, and then one stage he doesn't have any music. He doesn't know what's going on. Where's the music? Is something gonna happen?
Yeah, it adds to the fear in contrast, and that's another thing to think of, is when you are trying to convey an idea, and when you're trying to show and not tell, you want to use contrast. So when things are normal, you want to set a standard, basically. If things are okay, then you want to have a certain type of chipper music or adventurous music, you know, have use certain colors. But when you want to convey something that is different from that, you want to try and make it, depending on how drastic a difference you want, where if you want to convey somebody dying, you'll want, if you normally have very, like, epic and loud and adventurous music, you want to do the exact opposite. You want to have very soft and quiet and sad music going on, and then just a very toned down, you want to have very toned down colors if you normally have high colors. You want to have those contrast to what the normality is to what the difference is.
On the subject of music and sound effects, imagine another way of showing and not telling. Sound effects are very good for environments. Imagine a cave, a watery cave with just music, and then imagine the same watery cave with music that also has sound effects of dripping water in the background.
Yeah, exactly. I really like it when they have dungeons or caves and stuff where they add ambient sound effects.
Yeah, a good example of that is Metroid Prime.
Whoa!
No way.
Every podcast gets one.
Last one didn't.
Yes, it did.
I had a little rant about Metroid Prime. Actually, we had it in. Nice try. But yeah, like, the Metroid Prime soundtrack is completely ambient, and the environment actually makes the soundtrack. Well, yeah, a few songs, like the boss battles, but the soundtrack really adds to the isolation, because the nature sounds are in the soundtrack, so not only do you see the expansive nature in front of you, you hear it too. And that's another way to convey it, show don't tell.
Metroid Prime is full of music. Like, Fendrana Drifts is music.
But it also has the little squeaky ambient ice sounds in the background.
Yeah, they're layered. And
I don't think that's an actual song, because I've listened to the soundtrack and I don't really hear any ambient sound. They just add the ambient sound. See, That's the kicker. You listen to the Metroid Prime soundtrack by itself, and all you hear is just music. But when you listen
beautiful
to
music.
When you're in those areas in the game, there's the ambient sounds, but like Killam just confuses as being part of the song. They're so natural with the music that it just adds to the song itself. So it's ambient. You hear these sounds that are, you know, you hear the wind, you hear the cave drops and stuff, but it blends in with the music. So it just adds to the whole vibe of that exploration and that, you know, lost planet feel. Basically, you want to take sound effects, any sound effects you use that are ambient, you want to try and tie them into the music. You want to make sure they fit and they feel natural with it. You don't want to have some kind of like low tempo music that's very try and be creepy and stuff, and then you got loud lava noises in the background. It's too much of a change.
And you don't want to go overboard with the sound. Subtle is really good. Not too often if you're using the droplet effects for a cave, just here and there, quietly, but enough that the player notices it, and if it's layered well, then he can really feel like he's inside that area.
Yeah, exactly. It's that's the key thing here, is when it comes to show don't tell, it's all about subtlety. It's all about not beating somebody over the head with the details. You want to basically show it so it feels natural and it's subtle and it's not, you know, it's not overbearing.
You want the player to feel like he knows these things without nobody ever told him. He's just aware of what's happening. He feels these things. He doesn't see them necessarily.
Nobody wants to be talked to. It's you want to learn about it, but you don't exactly want somebody to give you a lecture about what's going on.
Yeah, yeah, it's something that he just understands because of the way things are put together.
Not like there are droplets falling down from the ceiling in the cave. Actually just have the sound effects of the droplets falling down instead. And
yeah, you don't have to have a character go in there and say, it's wet in here. You can actually show moisture on the ground and little puddles and stuff.
Well, okay, there's one more thing. I hate it when games or shows, they only have like three songs that they cycle through, like a main theme and then a sad theme and then an action-y theme. And then it's always those three same themes. Like, for example, this one's not a game, it's a show, Pushing Daisies. I'm sure you guys have heard of it before. I don't care if you haven't or not. Anyway, there's this one song. It's like piano, and they play it all the time. It's the same song over and over and over again, and it just ruins it because I watched like four episodes, and I heard the same song literally like 14 times.
Well, is it a leaf motif?
Light motif.
No.
Late, I'm so
leaf,
sorry.
Leaf? What did you call it?
I thought it was L-E-I-F.
No, it's L-E-I-T.
Okay, I'm sorry. Just cut that part out.
No.
Yes! Why are you such
the
a dick about that?
The world will know
that?
Your ignorance.
Right, anyway. Yeah, but was it a leaf motif? As in...
No,
does this,
it was... I feel like it was just them being lazy. It's just...
Because in my opinion, I love that. I love lead motifs. When you hear the main theme, the final boss battle, that sounds awesome.
Yeah, I love that idea. If you only have like four songs and then variations of those songs, like you have different theme songs for different characters, and if you have a musician and you're able to have him or her not reuse those songs entirely, but reference each other throughout the entire soundtrack, it can bring a whole game together in a really cohesive way, and I like that a lot.
Yeah, I like when they have like that main tune, but I was saying it was literally the same song. Like it wasn't different songs with the same tune. But like I loved in Final Fantasy X that they always had that same tune in a lot of the songs that you like the one that starts out in the very first song that you hear.
Oh, the Hymn of the Faith.
No, not that one.
No, the fucking it's when they're in it's before they're gonna do the blitz.
No, no, no. The very first song you hear when it shows them all around the campfire.
Oh, the crystal hymn where it's like.
No, it's
no, 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 no. The
that one.
Probably.
Really?
What? It's the Zanarkin song. I know what you're talking about.
I can't do it. I can't acapella it, but I'm pretty sure you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah, they also had the boss theme was the Hymn of the Faith. You could hear it in the background, and you're like, and when you heard it, you're like, holy shit, that's so cool. I know what that song is. I heard it the whole game.
Familiarity. Yeah, you'll definitely want to... it's good to associate songs. I mean, the Turks wouldn't nearly be as... The Turks wouldn't be who they were in Final Fantasy VII if they didn't have the Turks theme. Like, that theme, when that theme came on, you're like, oh shit, these guys are going to show up again.
Yeah.
Or in Pokemon, whenever you heard Gary's theme come on, you're like, God damn it, Gary!
Gary?
Yes, Gary. I will always call him Gary.
I don't recall a character named Gary in my Pokemon game.
His rival.
I know it's blue.
Let's talk about showing through gameplay. Something that I always talk about on the podcast is you really want to push gameplay first and foremost, since you're making a game after all. And a while ago, I wrote an article about a game called Brothers, A Tale of Two Sons. And the whole focus of that article was on how the gameplay itself was used to show the characters and the story and your connection to the characters. I won't go into too much detail here because there are some heavy, heavy spoilers. But if you've played the game, or if you just don't care about spoilers, check out the article on the Final Boss Blues website. It's a really interesting topic. But for the most part, you control each character individually with one controller, one with each control stick, and it's a little weird at first, but you get used to it.
But yeah, no, that game did a good with showing, because instead you would see... I really liked how in the very beginning of the game, there's this guy who keeps shutting the gates on you, and then you eventually get him locked. You eventually are running around, and it's never just like, I'm going to stop you. It's just more of, you get to a gate, and he's just standing there, like, locking the door, and he just kind of does a gesture towards you. He doesn't actually say any dialogue, but you can tell through his body language and what he's actually doing that he doesn't want you near the village.
And there's no dialogue throughout the entire game that's in a credible language. It's in an entirely made-up language. There's no subtitles, but you can understand what's being said through the context and the tone of voice. You can the entire story, it's not in English, it's not in Finnish or whatever. It's in a completely made-up language.
Exactly.
But you understand exactly what's going on. You understand exactly what the characters feel, and you understand exactly what they're going through, even though you can't understand what they're saying. And you can, most importantly, in the context of this specific game, you understand the relationship between the characters. And the cool thing about the gameplay is that you physically are both of the characters at once. And when something happens in the game, and, you know, maybe one character is stuck, or one character, for some reason, you can't control him, you feel it in your hands. And the story itself is specifically told through the gameplay, and you can really feel the story. And that just blew me away. I was so impressed by that game.
Yeah, Brothers: A Tale of Two Sons is a prime example of show, don't tell. They have zero dialogue in that game. Everything is showed through body language and just... little grunts and stuff. Yeah, in gameplay.
Well, another game I want to talk about that does the same thing in an opposite way is Earthbound. They, you remember the first town, Onet? They had the police set up the fences that was clearly blocking your progress because they wanted to be the police force with the most fences put up in the world. And remember? That was actually a way that they showed... No, they told instead of showing, but they reversed it and they made it funny.
Yeah, they told you in a way where they weren't telling you.
Yeah, yeah. They basically gave a reason within the world why this gameplay purpose existed.
And that's another reason. Thing.
It was humorous. But yeah, it's basically, instead of just having, why are all these barriers up here, they basically said, well, we just want to have the most fences put up in the world. We're trying to break a record. It gives a goofy, lighthearted, it fits with the theme of the game. And it's more of, in that case, it's kind of explaining why there's this gameplay reason here, except for just because video games, which is another subject entirely.
That's using setting and dialogue to cover up the tell, even though you're telling them, which is really clever on their part.
Yeah, that approach is really game-specific, and I think that's a good example because it brings us to the point of keeping the whole thing in the tone of your game. Some games, the whole style and theme lend themselves better to the concept of showing, not telling. But even if you have an entirely text game, for example, you can still show, don't tell. Obviously, you go back to what I said in the very beginning of the episode where I was talking more about writing fiction.
But yeah, like with Earthbound, for example, the gameplay tone was very humorous, so it made sense to have that as a block because it just fit the setting. It's not like it was just randomly put in there. It fit the tone completely, so they could get away with that. So if your game has a similar concept, then yeah, you can do the same thing as them.
Another way that I was thinking of show, don't tell, is about training your player to understand things about the game and the world and how they work together. Going back a little bit to Brothers, it does a fantastic job of you understand the gameplay in the beginning. It's very straightforward. You have a stick for each character and a button for each character. And that's pretty much all you have throughout the entire game. And early on in the game, you reach a point where a character has to swim, and the little brother has to climb on the big brother's back, and it explains that to you, and you figure it out. Then later on in the game, something happens, and the game already explained to you how it worked, so you solve the puzzle later on by recalling that memory, even though it doesn't explain anything to you later on. Something that the way that the game teaches you things over the course of the game, later on, if the player understands something innately, then you don't have to tell them again or, you know, hammer their head with it. That's one of the biggest problems I had with the new Zelda game.
Oh, Skyward Sword.
Yeah. Probably the only Zelda game that, you know, I'd forget the name for because I didn't like it that much. The reason I didn't like it that much was for this exact reason. It just hammered you over the head with telling. Like, I mean, in Ocarina of Time, people make fun of Navi for telling you the same thing. She is nothing compared to the annoying sword companion in this game, where she just won't shut up. Like, Zelda, at one point I remember specifically, Zelda and Impa, they're like, hey, we're gonna go to this place next. And then your sword person comes alive and says, hey, I think they're going to this place. Why are you telling me that twice? It's frustrating. And the whole...
No shit, bitch! They just said where they're going!
I think that minimizing that kind of repetition, and in case a player misses out on it, maybe make it so... Obviously, you'd want some way for the player to get it optionally, a reminder somehow, but hammering the same idea over and over and over again is just going to annoy and frustrate your player.
Well, it depends how subtle you are. Like, as an example for RPGs specifically, let's say you're in dungeon and you're fighting a bunch of heavily armored enemies and they're only resistant to magic, so you want to cast magic against them. That's going to set a tone for the player through repetition that heavily armored enemies are weak to magic. And then the boss comes along who's heavily armored and the player's just going to spam magic. And you didn't tell him that he was weak to magic. The player, through repetition and gameplay, just put it together himself easily.
Exactly. The game trained him to think in a certain way.
Yeah, repetition isn't a bad thing, but...
That's not repetition. I was talking
about
repetition.
That's not repetition. That's called
telling.
Being consistent.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry.
That's an example of a good way of showing and not telling. That's completely different than what I was talking about, where the idea of, you know, you don't want to tell your player something over and over again. In your example, it's a great example because it shows you show your character something. Maybe you tell him in the beginning, and then you consistently show him throughout the game, and he learns that's how the game works, that's how this world functions, and then he knows it intuitively for the rest of the experience.
I don't even think you should tell him in the beginning. He'll learn himself. He's going to attack it with a physical weapon, zero damage, and then a magic attack does 400 damage.
Well, that depends a lot on the game.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, what you're talking about reminds me a lot of Mega Man X. I don't remember what the YouTube video I was watching was from the dude, but he was talking about it. Mega Man X. They don't tell you how to do anything. Like, they just leave you to, you know, figure out how to jump, and, oh, look, you can actually jump off of walls, how to shoot, and all that. They don't tell you how to do any of it.
Yeah, we talked about that when we were talking about game intros, and I would not shut up about that video. I love that video because that is the perfect example of introducing gameplay. That is a very good example of showing and not telling. It basically, through gameplay, helped you figure it out. It's just, oh, hey, there's this wall here. I can't jump, but you jump against it. Oh, crap, I can jump again. Why is he sliding? Like, through graphics, through poses of the character, the player kind of learned the gameplay. Not one prompt came up, like, push A to jump. Mega Man.
Nope, don't do that, please.
When it comes to show and don't tell, the key things you want to remember are subtlety, and don't beat people with the opposite phrases. You don't want to beat people over the head with information. You want to look to things like Mega Man X's intro stage. You want to look to the way Brothers, A Tale of Two Sons handled dialogue or lack thereof. And you want to look at the way Metroid Prime does a lot of its ambience with its music and sound design. There's great examples out there, but the key thing is to just, instead of, you don't want to hand things to the player. It all ties into, you want to make it so the player discovers it on their own. Nobody wants to be talked down to. Nobody wants to be treated like they're an idiot and over-explained.
Like
you want
Zelda.
To, like in Skyward Sword, you want to basically sit there and go, hey, here's a playground, here's a sandbox. Jump in the sandbox, and through that you'll learn how the sandbox, you'll learn how the sand works. That's how little kids, they play in the sandbox, they learn how sand works, and then how they make castles out of it. You just give them the tools and let them discover how it works. Don't be afraid to let them figure things out. You know, you just, through your design and through your balancing, you'll figure out what parts are too hard and too difficult. But if anybody requires explanation, they're just being lazy. You need to just let them figure things out. That's part of the fun of these games.
Yeah, at the very best, you don't want any prompts in your game, because that takes away from the realism. It takes away from the immersion. So if you can have no prompts or nothing telling the player what to do, that's awesome. No tutorials, let the player learn how to do it on his own, because he feels rewarded for doing so.
Yeah, a lot of times they're unavoidable, and especially in RPGs, especially if you're going towards a more mass market audience. If you plan on being released on Steam, you're going to want some kind of explanation of the battle system, but you can always make it optional.
Yeah, you can. Honestly, the best thing for me, like, I was playing Bravely Default, and that's a fun game. It just has a help button you can tap on, and that brings up the control scheme for battles. There is a, like, they show some tutorials in the beginning, but there's never just prompt sitting there going, push R to do this throughout the game. There's just, if you want that extra help, if you want to know which buttons do what, you can tap a button, brings up the controls.
Yeah, and lastly, just going back to our one of our first points, you can really show the world, show the state of the environment that your characters are in graphically, through dialogue, through all of these things that we've talked about. You just want to be able to bring your character in by showing him, putting him inside. You know, you don't want to just tell him what's going on. You want to make him feel like it's a living, breathing world that he's a part of and interacting with. Do we have any other final thoughts on the subject of show, don't tell?
I think I'm good.
I'm good.
I'm okay, yeah.
And with that, everyone, I'd like to thank you all for listening. This has been episode 17 of the Final Boss Blues podcast. As always, you can reach us on the various social media, such as the Twitters and the Facebooks. On Twitter, you can find us at Final Boss Blues, at Raynard Frost, and at KillMIG. And on Facebook, it's, I believe, Facebook.com/Final Boss Blues. Once again, thanks a lot for listening, and have a good day.
Make sure you end with a pun.
End
no,
with
don't,
a pun.
Don't do that. Don't listen to Jed.
Like, stay frosty, okay. Listeners.
Oh, God.
How is that a pun that's not related? Oh, because Raynard
my name.
That sounds so gay. You have no idea. I'll be right back.
He's gonna go masturbate.
I'm gonna go take a shower. I feel disgusting. The gun's coming out. You got 3 seconds.